Rainmaker FM. You're listening to The Digital Entrepreneur, the show for folks who want to discover smarter ways to create and sell profitable digital goods and services. This podcast is a production of Digital Commerce Institute, the place to be for digital entrepreneurs. For more information, go to rainmaker.fm/digital commerce. That's rainmaker.fm/digital commerce.
Welcome to The Digital Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Sean Jackson, and I'm joined as always by the analytical Katie Katz. Katie, how are you?
I am doing well, and I'm excited and down with that introduction.
Well, as you can tell, I'm a little bit under the weather, Katie. I'm down with a cold, I think, so my voice is slowly fading. But our audience is too important, Katie. I have to show up for them.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. You are a soldier.
And especially given today's topic, because, you know, as digital marketers, we are awash in data. But too often, that data can give us confusing signals, may not be clear, or we may not even have the right data. So as marketers, I think we don't talk enough about data analysis. What do you say?
Absolutely. And it's incredibly important. I mean, how do you know if you're making the right choices, if you're using the right strategy, if the strategy you're using is working? You need all of that, and you need to be able to do it effectively in order to prove ROI.
Agreed. And it's so important that it reminds me of a story of a college class I was asked to give a speech to. So I went into this college class filled with all these young potential marketers, and we were talking about the skills that they need to succeed as online marketers. Now, of course, I talked about the value of writing. You know, after all, we are communicators, so writing being a big part of how to be successful in online marketing. And then I also said, well, you know, if you have artistic capability, obviously visual communication is also very important because, you know, again, we're trying to communicate. So whether it's words or pictures, you know, that is a skill set that if you have it, you will do well in online marketing. And most people were shaking their heads. And out of the back of the room, this one young lady rose her hand up and she goes, well, you know, Mr. Jackson, I'm not really good at writing and I have no visual capability, but I really enjoy online marketing. And I go, well, that may be okay. What do you really like? What is something that you're very passionate about? And she goes, oh, data. And I was like, my dear, you have a career in online marketing and you may find your skill set is in such high demand that you'll make more than all the writers or the illustrators combined. So
absolutely. I'm sure that there would be employers lining up to hire her.
And they were, and they did, because I will say it is a rare skill set, but it is an important skill set. And for today's show, we have the very famous Annie Cushing from Annielytics joining us so that you can take your passions online and understand how that data really can move your site to the next level. So stay tuned.
Hey, my name is Brian Gardner, and I am the creator of StudioPress, the first premium marketplace for WordPress themes. When I created StudioPress, I could never imagine that more than 200,000 WordPress site owners would use StudioPress to build some of the most elegant and inspiring WordPress sites on the web. And I am not just talking about the numerous large companies that use it. Tens of thousands of food bloggers, podcasters, affiliate marketers, real estate agents, photographers, and many more have created some of the most compelling mobile responsive websites using StudioPress. But that is not all. To make it easy for you to create a compelling WordPress site, we have introduced StudioPress Sites, a turnkey, simple method to create and grow your WordPress site. StudioPress Sites includes many of our most popular WordPress themes, with unique SEO tools and plugins all integrated on our high-performance, secure, and actively managed hosting infrastructure. So when you are ready to take your WordPress site to a new level without the worry or hassle of less robust solutions, then I hope you will visit StudioPress.com. Over 200,000 bloggers and webmasters trust StudioPress for their WordPress site, and we work hard every day to earn it.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. So, Katie, we have a very famous individual on the show today, so please introduce them to our audience.
We do. We have Annie Cushing, who is the founder of Annielytics, and she is, as you mentioned, a world-recognized expert on Google Analytics and strategic analysis of marketing data. She's also a dedicated educator on the topic, and she has a bunch of free and paid resources that are available within her website on the resources tab. So I think that we might be talking about those a little today, and also people should definitely check them out.
Annie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You know, it is such an honor to have you here. I mean, truly, you have set the benchmark for so many people when it comes to understanding analytics, understanding all of this data that we as marketers seem to be awash in and trying to help make sense of it. I mean, I know so many people who are inspired by your work. So I am personally thankful you're on the show today. But I am going to challenge you. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Google Analytics, ubiquitous, it seems, across the web and how many people use it. But I'm going to be the skeptic here. Should our audience really trust Google Analytics? I mean, of all the ways that we capture data about people, is Google Analytics the end-all be-all? Or are there other things to augment it? Should we, at the end of the day, believe in what Google is telling us?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I do think that Google Analytics is a really powerful tool. And at minimum, you get your money's worth, especially people who are using the free version. I do think overall, it's as trustworthy as any tool can be that relies on cookies. So there is a growing movement where people are becoming a lot more concerned about privacy, about not being tracked on the web. And there are a lot more like plugins and, you know, Chrome add-ins and extensions that people can use that say, I don't want to be tracked. Wherever I go, I don't want to be tracked. And so that is at the core definitely going to impact the quality of your data. And, you know, so a common question I get is, you know, why doesn't my revenue data from Google Analytics match up with my data from my database? And that's going to account for usually roughly about a 2-5% differential between your database and Google Analytics. If you see a greater than 5% differential, you may have a particularly tech-savvy audience. The less tech-savvy audience there is, the more accurate your data is going to be, because fewer people are going to even know about the option to not be tracked. I have seen verticals where their target audience is particularly tech savvy, like for my site, and that may account for a little bit more. But also there are other issues that can impact how accurate your data is, particularly if you're using, you know, a tool like Google Tag Manager. You know, so when Tag Manager first came out, Google said, we want this to be at the top of the body tag. And then later they said, LOL, JK, we want it in the head, and we want it as far up in the head as possible, which made a lot more sense to me. The only problem is that message really hasn't gotten out en masse that you're supposed to move your tag manager code. So a lot of tag manager codes are still in the body and sometimes not even at the top of the body. Yeah. So that can, issues like that can also impact the accuracy of your Google Analytics tracking, you know, things like that. Those issues aside, the main issue isn't so much the accuracy or how much you can trust it. It's more how well it's optimized. You know, so, you know, you're pretty consistently getting the data from Google Analytics as good as you're going to get it. But from there, when I do analytics audits, the biggest issues I see really tend to be more around the optimization of their Google Analytics, if that makes sense. That said, you should make sure that you don't try to use Google Analytics in a way that other products were intended to be used. Case in point, someone wrote a blog post. I really respect this person. He works with Lunametrics. He wrote this blog post about how to use a Google Tag Manager to be able to track lifetime customer value in Google Analytics. So I threw a flag on the play and said, you know, just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should. And customer lifetime value, that's already a thing. That was a thing long before even the internet, let alone Google Analytics. And, you know, and so you should not be using Google Analytics to track customer lifetime value. So I ended up writing kind of a response post, not to be a douche canoe, but just to, you know, kind of put it out there that I just don't think that this is a good idea, because even if you set it up today and you say, okay, I'm going to start tracking customer lifetime value. If let's say Zappos set that up today and I bought a pair of shoes, I'm a shoe enthusiast. I love funky shoes particularly. And if I bought a pair of shoes today for $50, if Zappos said my customer lifetime value was $50, I would laugh out loud. I mean, I have sunk so much money into Zappos. And so that just highlights that, you know, the issue there that, you know, they need to be relying on their database where all of my purchases are kept. And it's not reliant on a cookie or anything like that. They know how much I have spent and they would be able to report the accurate customer lifetime value. And lo and behold, it was like maybe 2 months after I published that post, might have been a little bit less, a little bit more. Google made the announcement, you can now track customer lifetime value in Google Analytics. And I was just like, okay, the inmates have taken over the asylum. You know, so, I mean, so I think that that perfectly illustrates that, you know, regardless of how Googlers may view Google Analytics, it is not the end all be all. And you need to optimally be marrying your Google Analytics data with other data, like from your back end, marrying it with your social data, using some kind of dashboard tool, something like that. And then I think you see Google Analytics, or, you know, even if you're using Adobe Analytics or whatever analytics package you're using, within a greater context. Yeah. So that's my take on Google Analytics.
On that note of trust, one of the questions I get asked the most by clients is how come, for example, if they're paying for ads on Facebook, it says that I had 570 clicks, but Google Analytics is saying that I only had, 300 visits from paid social, specifically from the ad. And of course, we all know that there are lots of answers to that. Like you said, Annie, with cookies and switching from secure platforms. But many people also might not know that they're on the free platform, could be some sampling things going on. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so sampling can be a really significant issue. Sampling isn't always the cause of disparity between different tools. You see a difference in reporting even between Search Console and Google Analytics, like, you know, comparing clicks with actual sessions in Google Analytics. So what limitations does that put on you? Basically, you can use any of the standard reports in Google Analytics without sampling. So any of the reports that you see in that, you know, left sidebar, you can use them and you're not going to get sampling because that data has already been pre-processed. If you try to apply an advanced segment, if you try to create a custom report, with one little exception, I haven't seen this in any of Google's help files, but if you choose some time element, so if you create a custom report and you break it down by like year and month, for whatever reason, you're not going to get sampling. But every other custom report, you're going to get sampling out the wazoo. So to get around that, you're either going to need to invest in Google Analytics, the 360 version, or you're going to need to use some kind of solution where on a daily or twice daily basis, You're taking your Google Analytics data, dropping it, using the API, dropping it into a database and storing all of your data.
Wow, that is so much for everybody to think about. And you can see why oftentimes, no matter if you're an expert or a beginner, it's very easy for someone to make mistakes while using Google Analytics. As an expert and someone who works with companies of all sizes, what are there some common mistakes that you see?
Yeah, so there are. And I do a lot of audits of Google Analytics accounts. And hands down, the number one mistake, and it actually, I'm going to say number one and number two because they're kissing cousins. The mistagging of campaigns and not using custom channels. So they go together so closely that I'm just going to cover them both at the same time. And I've been hitting on this a lot on my site. I have a campaign tagging guide that's really, really comprehensive. In fact, if you just search in Google campaign tagging, my guide usually for most countries comes up first. It's very, very comprehensive. It has everything that you could need to learn how to do campaign tagging. I have a video where I break it down into really simple terms. I share a Google Sheet that helps you pull together your campaign tags that has, like, you know, kind of step-by-step instructions. I share some of the gotchas and I link to other resources on my site, even the last two blog posts. I've covered, like, you know, why you want to use custom channels and how to create them. And then just a couple weeks ago, I wrote a blog post about campaign tagging disasters I've seen out in the wild. So I've kind of used examples from real sites, and a lot of them are large publishers, large sites, just to kind of show people, listen, even among the big players, like, you know, we're talking like BuzzFeed and, you know, really big, The Independent, you know, their campaign tags are trashing their data. And so the reason that this is, the reason it's the most common issue is that there's just not really clear guidance on campaign tagging. So you use campaign tagging essentially to be able to track any kind of marketing campaigns you do. So that includes email, social, if you have display ads, if you're doing retargeting, if you're doing, you know, paid social, all of these are marketing campaigns. And you need to use something called campaign tags, where you're basically telling Google, here's what I want to use for the medium, here's what I want to use for the source, here's what I want to use for the campaign name. But with great power comes great responsibility. And so you have the power. If you don't understand how to use campaign tags, this data can show up in what I call Google's junk drawer. And it's this channel in the channels report, which the channels report is hands down my favorite report in Google Analytics. It's my jumping off point for most analysis that I do. And you get to it by going to acquisition, all traffic, channels. Google gave us the channels report, I believe it was October 2013. Before that point, we only had the medium dimension to work with. And the medium dimension it tends to be very messy, especially if the site has done a lot with campaign tagging, because people didn't know how to do campaign tagging. A lot of people still don't. And so there were times where I'd go to, you know, work on a client's site and they would literally have thousands of different mediums because they were using mediums as their campaign and, you know, and all these different, you know, they're called parameters. Basically, if it precedes an equal sign in a URL, that's a parameter. And whatever comes on the right side of the equal sign is the value. And so these parameters were just all being used interchangeably. And I mean, even for the most advanced site doing really, really advanced marketing campaigns, they shouldn't have more than 10, maybe 12 mediums tops. absolute tops. So, you know, first things first, if you go into an account and you see, you know, 123 mediums, you already know, okay, that we're going to be dealing with some pretty messy data. So what Google did as you know, kind of a starting point was they kind of took a pooper scooper to the medium and collected these different mediums into channels. So they tried to figure out what people were using to identify social traffic. And they said, okay, if the mediums match social or social media or SM, then they added a few more in the past year, then go ahead and put that traffic into this social channel. And if the medium matches, you know, email, then put it in this email channel, et cetera, et cetera. And the problem comes in a couple things. One, when Google set up these definitions, for some reason that I can't wrap my mind around, they made the medium case sensitive. So they say, for example, you know, if you want your traffic, your email traffic to show up in the email channel, you have to tag it email. But if you use a capital E, it will not show up in the email channel. It will show up in the junk drawer, which is this other channel. So if you go into your channels report, and you see a lot of traffic in your other channel, then you have a campaign tagging issue because the only traffic that shows up in your other channel will be traffic that's mistagged either by you or sometimes by people outside your organization. Because again, since people don't understand campaign tagging, a lot of times they'll tag links to someone else's site, which I compare to painting your neighbor's fence. The fence might need painting, but as a general rule, you don't want to paint your neighbor's fence, you know. So, you know, so we're not, a lot of times we're not going to totally get all traffic out of our other channel because of other people tagging traffic. But for the most part, if you see a burgeoning other channel, that's something of your own doing. And so if you go in there and there's just something called a primary dimension. If you click on that other channel, the primary dimension is going to show a source. That's not going to help you. You want to change that primary dimension to medium, and all of those mediums will be the ones that Google says, I don't know what these are. And so at that point, at that juncture, you have to decide, and this is what I do in every audit. One of the first things I do, you know, aside from checking some of the other, you know, bells and whistles that I'll talk about, is I go into the other channel, change the primary dimension from source to medium, and that's my jumping off point. I say, okay, all right, that's, you know, and if I see a lot of mediums in there, you know, I generally tell the client, I have good news and bad news. The good news is you got your money's worth out of this audit. The bad news is we have quite a bit of cleanup to do. And so once you identify that you have traffic in that other channel, then you have a couple of different choices. One, you need to make sure that you start using mediums that Google recognizes. And if you guys share resources when you share the podcast, I can share a link with you that from
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we will.
Okay, it's on the Google site, and it's really buried in the Google site, but it tells you exactly which mediums you can use for each channel. And it's a really useful resource to use. And so you need to make sure you're using mediums that Google recognizes, and or you can do something where you customize your channels. So you basically go into the channels that Google already has, such as your social channel, and you say, in addition to how Google defines social traffic, I also want to say that if the medium matches Twitter or Facebook, also, you know, that's a common mistake, people, yeah, using the medium, you know, that should really be the source. So, you know, I call it kind of future-proofing your channels. You know, if there's been a history of this kind of, you know, mistagging behavior, then I want to future-proof or dummy-proof their channels and say, you know, in the event that someone, you know, backslides and starts using Twitter or Facebook again, I'm just going to customize the social channel to say also accept, you know, Twitter or Facebook. And then you can also create custom channels. So Google's resources say that the default channel grouping is adequate basically for most users, but some, you know, really crazy marketers may want to create custom channels. And I say flip that on its axis. For most users, for most site owners, the default channels are woefully inadequate. There are really important missing channels, such as there is no paid social channel. There's no channel for retargeting. And in fact, one Google resource recommended using They recommend using display. And I think that's a really, really bad idea, because retargeted traffic and display traffic is very, very different. You know, display is typically just kind of, you know, spray and pray. You know, you just kind of put it out there en masse. It's a branding play. You know, that's where like the ads are showing up on different, you know, publisher sites and stuff, you know, but that display tends to not like drive a lot of conversions or anything like that. With retargeted traffic, although they are technically display ads, I'm not just splitting hairs here, it's a very different type of targeting. You know, so if your retargeting is done well, you could target someone who they came to your page, they put something in the cart, and they left your site. And, you know, so that's very different from, you know, display. So I recommend using a custom channel, which means you have to use typically like a custom medium and stuff. So those are basically the two remedies. And in the show notes, we will share resources from my site that, I mean, they really take you by the hand and walk you through the process. And again, I show very real examples from what I've seen out in the wild. I show examples of some custom channels that I've created for my site.
That's a great way for us to segue to the end, because your resource page, Annie, I think is probably the most important page for anyone who needs to understand all this information. You have done a phenomenal job with that page. I mean, I have a bookmark, Katie. I know you have a bookmark, right?
Definitely.
And I will say this, you have the videos on there. You have a ton of free stuff on there. You have a ton of paid stuff that's really great value, quite frankly, because the Excel integration, I know that's one of your tools that you put out there. So I would highly encourage all of our listeners to go to that resource page at analytics.com/resources. And we will absolutely put a link in the show notes to it. Annie, I know you can go on about this. I personally can't thank you enough for everything you've contributed. You have really enabled average people to understand the wealth of data through what you have done. And I can't thank you enough for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And we will be right back after this short break.
Hey everyone, this is Sean Jackson, the host of The Digital Entrepreneur, and I want to ask you a simple question. What is your business framework for selling digital goods online? Now, if the question perplexes you, don't worry, you are not alone. Most people don't realize that the most successful digital entrepreneurs have a framework or a general process for creating and selling their digital goods in the online space. And one of the best free resources is Digital Commerce Academy. Digital Commerce Academy combines online learning with case studies and webinars created by people who make a living selling digital goods online. And the best part is that this material is free when you register. Are you interested in joining? Well, I'll make it easy for you. If you're listening to the show on your phone and are in the continental United States, I want you to send a text message to 313131 with the keyword digits, D-I-G-I-T-S. And when you send that text message, we will send you a link to the registration form right to your phone. Are you outside the United States? Don't worry. Just send us an email to digits@rainmaker.fm. Either way, we'll send you a link to the registration form so that you can sign up for free for Digital Commerce Academy. And as a special bonus, we will also subscribe you to our newsletter when you text or email us so that you can stay informed with the latest insights from the show. And don't worry, we respect your privacy and we will not share your email or phone number, and you can easily unsubscribe at any time. So if you want to start building or improving your framework for selling digital goods online, then please send a text to 313131 with the keyword digits, or send us an email at digits@rainmaker.fm. You won't be disappointed.
Welcome back from the break. So Katie, it is time for us to give some recommendations to our audience. And given the fact that we just got through talking to Annie about all the wonderful resources she has, I know there's some other things that you personally like to help augment when you're having to deal with lots of data. So give it to us, Katie.
Yeah, one of my favorite tools is Zapier. It's a really great little tool that you can use. Annie talked about APIs and making sure that you're having your data talk to each other. And a tool like Zapier is awesome because you can take information from somewhere like Google Analytics and zap it into a Google Sheet, or you can take something from Facebook and zap it in somewhere else. So it's a great way to take out that hands-on time of putting something from one place to another and really automating the whole process.
So I would recommend that tool as well. Gosh knows that, especially given all the different systems we work with, having something that can help glue it together is what we usually need so we can make sense of all this. And Katie, I think you have a wonderful recommendation. Can't endorse it enough. So, well, that'll be it for this episode of The Digital Entrepreneur. And we will both catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone.